All right, good morning. Let's get started. I'm Aaron Hillegas. I'm just thrilled to be here. I appreciate all of you coming in the morning after the party. This is the top things that iOS developers need to know as they start developing for Windows 8. I hope you're here for that. This is also going to be the last session in this room, so if you've come to take a nap, this is a really good place to do it. We will all quietly file out after the talk and leave you sleeping here. Let me do the agenda just really quickly. I'm going to talk about who I am, why I'm here. I'm going to do the top 10 tips. The top 10 format I love because as you're counting it down, if you're getting tired, you know, well, now I've only got four left. I can make it. And then we'll open it up for Q&A. My name is Aaron Hillegas. I am not a Microsoft employee. I actually have a company called the Big Nerd Ranch, and we are well known in the iOS community. So I used to work for Next Computer, and then after the merger, I worked for Apple for a while. And so a lot of the technologies that are part of iOS, I've been working with for 20 years. And we have books on iOS and Cocoa programming. I've written four of those total now. And we do training and consulting. So we go all over the world teaching people how to do iOS programming and also just sitting down and writing code for them if they need us to do that. And so 3 months ago, Jaime Rodriguez here from Microsoft Evangelism called me up and said, Aaron, you should really think about starting offering your services on Windows 8 and porting your apps to Windows 8. And I hung up the phone and said, stop calling me. And then I thought about it more, and I thought a restraining order was really more appropriate. Because to me, Microsoft has always been the evil empire, and they had always used their monopoly to sort of slow down innovation in my mind. So I was not a huge fan of Microsoft. But then I started thinking about it, and I realized that really the world had shifted, that the tablet was going to be a major part of where our industry was going, and that we really needed a viable alternative to the iPad. And so even though I am an Apple fan, I believe that it's important that we all develop applications for the Windows 8 store as well. So in particular, competition is important to keep Apple honest. Because as I said, the world has shifted. Right now, on the tablet, Apple is the person to beat. They are the potential monopoly power. And Microsoft is the alternative. One of the things that iOS programmers are consistently frustrated with is the idea that you can't do free trial periods of time for your application. The person needs to pay for the application at the same moment they download it. And so it's really, really hard to convince someone to pay more than 99 cents for an application because it's a gamble. There's so much bad, right? There's 700,000 apps, and so many of them are bad, no one wants to pay for it until after they've seen if it's any good. So we're all stuck selling our applications for 99 cents. And this has been brought up with Apple over and over again, people begging for this possibility. And as soon as Windows announced their store, the first thing they said is, we're going to allow you to do free trial periods on your applications for your users. It's optional, but they recommend it. And that is going to make it possible for you to charge more money for a good application. It will wildly change the economics of the problem. And what we're all hoping in the Apple community is that when this viable alternative arises, that it will pressure Apple to treat their developers as well as Microsoft is treating their developers. Right? So politically, I believe that it's important that we all of us iOS developers, also learn how to develop applications for Windows 8. But I don't have the time just to do things for the warm and fuzzies. So I needed to know that there was a business case. So I unblocked Jaime's phone, I called him back, and I said, can you give me some idea of the numbers that we're talking about here? And he said, you can pretty safely assume that there's going to be 700 million devices that people can run the application on. And that sounded pretty good. I mean, Windows 7, basically 700 million copies have sold. So there's devices out there already that can run Windows 8, 700 million of them. There are only about 10,000 apps in the Windows Store right now. So this is another opportunity in my mind, because when you think about something like Angry Birds, Right, Angry Birds took a year after the iPhone SDK to ship. It came out a year and a half afterwards. But it was early enough where they could claim that area. I mean, it's a good game, but it's not incredible. But they have created an incredible franchise off of it. And even today, they make about $60 million in profits on the Angry Birds franchise. They're talking about doing a television show. So what we're saying is that on the Windows 8 platform, in the Windows Store, there is a huge opportunity to create those sorts of franchises at this point. It is 2009 all over again. If you missed the opportunity to write a bubble wrap app that the kids could poke and it went pop, 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 and make some money off of that, you may get the opportunity again now with the Windows App Store. The other thing that he told me is that the revenues are going to work slightly differently. So up until the first $25,000 in revenues, it will be just like Apple. You'll get 70% of the revenues. Microsoft will keep 30. But once you get over $25,000, the split changes. So you get to keep 80%. And this is another compelling argument, that there are certain apps in the store that are clearly more important than others, and it's nice to be able to reward the developers who put in the extra time in marketing and development. All right, so there is a business case here, and there is a political case as well. So the next thing I'm going to do is point out that it's not that tricky, and I'm also going to point out some things that you can do to make your apps more successful as you move them to the Windows platform. All right, so these are the 10 things I've learned. The first thing is, I was really afraid. So I have 20 years experience writing iPhone apps. I mean, it's basically the same technologies. And I was moving into a new set of technologies. And I was worried that I had to start again at zero. But as it turned out, there were a lot of parallels. So the first thing that paid off is that writing iPad applications for several years, we knew how to create applications that could be worked with touch. So very simple, task-centered application, and task-centered design, very responsive with animation. All of this transferred over to the Windows platform, with a couple little exceptions, and I'll point those out in just a second. But overall, what we knew about designing for the iPad means that we actually understand developing for the Surface as well. The next thing was the language, C#. So you can develop for Windows 8 in a bunch of different languages. You can do these store apps in JavaScript, in C#, in C++, and Visual Basic. Overall, I think that most people coming from iOS are going to feel most comfortable going to C#. You don't feel quite as close to the metal. You're not going to be aware of the pointers that are moving around and things like that. If you want to be close to the metal, you should think about C++. But overall, C# is a very unsurprising language. If you've worked in Objective-C, if you've worked in Java, C# is not a big surprise. There are a couple of little surprises. In particular, the word delegate in iOS programming means something very specific. And when you get to C#, they're going to start using the word delegate, and it means something completely different. But it's close enough that you're going to be confused. So let me point out that the word delegate for a C# programmer is a little like a function pointer. It's a type. The variables can be of delegate type. And so that's sort of the big jump that I had to get over. But the rest of it is pretty normal. They call things different words. For example, they say interface, and iOS programmers say protocol. But it's the same ideas. It's a single inheritance language. It has a real garbage collector as opposed to the reference counting that we do. So you don't have to worry about weak versus strong references. The garbage collector will just take care of that for you. The other thing we have in parallel is the idea of the zip file and the XAML file. And so both sets of developer tools have a GUI builder. In Xcode, we have the interface builder editor, which you create zip files with. And you know, you can drag out objects onto the window, describe what you have, and then save it as part of the project. When it gets read in, all those objects are brought back to life. The XAML file is very similar. The XAML file is, once again, it's XML. It describes how your objects are going to be created. It's it's a little bit different in that it follows more of a cascading style sheets idea. So when you have 20 different text fields, you can give them all the same style, and you change that style in one place, and they all get updated together, which is a nice addition to the idea. But we'll talk about that a little more as we go forward. The other thing that worked the same is web services. So if your application almost certainly uses web services, you can consume those on either platform, and so you get to reuse those as well. So you're not starting from zero. That's the point. One thing that is a little bit different is the APIs. So when I did the last round of Windows programming that I did, it was Win32. And it was a very simple, primitive C API. And you would make a call, and you would give it a null pointer. And the call would fail, and you would get back the size of the buffer you had to allocate, and you'd allocate that size buffer, and you'd make the same call again, and it would succeed, and the data would be copied into the buffer. So it was kicking it old school, right? And so I was worried when I started doing these Windows 8 apps that I would actually have to go back to doing Win32. And the nice news is that these store apps actually use the Windows runtime. So this is a set of modern APIs. They're wrapped for each language. You can access all the capabilities from C#, C++, Visual Basic, and JavaScript. So it's nice for the JavaScript programmers in our company that they can go and do things that are very operating system specific using JavaScript. Although the APIs are different, they're all analogous. There's parallel capabilities. So, for example, the ability to parse XML. Both platforms have a way to parse XML. They have ways to do networking and authentication. There are a couple of things missing from each platform that the other one doesn't have. So, in my mind, these are sort of covered by iOS. The purple iOS has all of the purple stuff. SMS, we don't have a nice way to talk to the SMS system from your phone. We don't have the idea of contracts, which we'll talk about in a minute. We don't have live tiles. We don't have near-field communications. Similarly, on the Windows 8, you're going to find that they don't have Bonjour, and they don't have Core Data. So Core Data is our persistence mechanism, and it's built on top of SQLite. SQLite has been ported to Windows 8, and you can use SQLite in your applications. You just have to talk to its SQLite API. You don't get the nice wrapper that is Core Data. Okay? Okay.
So,
OpenGL is on Windows 8. However, you can't use it from your store apps. You have to use DirectX. So the similar thing that you have here is DirectX on Windows 8. Okay? Other questions? Go ahead. So I don't know anything about that. The question is, doesn't Google have some sort of a wrapper for DirectX that makes it look like OpenGL? I don't know the answer. Or is it the other way? So given that you will be coming from iOS and you need some way to look up the analogous APIs in the Windows Runtime Library, Microsoft has been working on a website that does the mapping for you. And so I thought I would show that to you right now. So it's just a relatively simple web application. But let's say you were looking for a UI button, right? In iOS, you would drag out a UI button, and you need the analogous object in the Windows Runtime API. Well, you would know that the UI button is part of the UI kit framework. And UI button is here. And it would show you that the class in the Windows Runtime is button. You could click here, and it would open up the documentation page for you. And you would see all the methods and what it inherited from and the properties for the Windows Runtime button. So that may be helpful to you as you go forward. Right? I'll go back to it in just a second. There it is. So it's aka.ms iOS map. And then that will redirect you, and you'll have the real URL forevermore. It was just too long to fit on the slide. Okay. All right. The next issue that you will face is changes that the users expect in the user experience when they're on the Windows 8 App Store. In particular, well, let me show you. First thing I want to say is they're a lot the same. Everyone is going to make a big deal about how different they are. They're not that different. Okay? The users still expect simple, task-centered applications that have animations that describe to them clearly what the system is doing at any given moment. And they're expecting direct manipulation. They're going to be able to touch stuff and push it around. So right away, 90% is the same. And what I'm going to talk about next, and I'm going to emphasize, is really the differences. Okay? All right. So on iOS, overall, we do a much more skeuomorphic design. That we tend to make things look like something from the real world. So here's the notepad example. This is an Apple application. And you can see it looks like a notepad. It's on leather and it's stitched, and you've got the little torn off papers at the top and squiggly stuff that looks like ink. If you go to the newsstand app, it actually looks like wood. It's oil rubbed mahogany and it shines in the sun. Overall, Windows design, the design language, is much more, well, the phrase they use is authentically digital. And that is just, it's a computer program, make it look like a computer program. Just make it the best you can. So you're going to see, right, we work really hard in the Apple community to make it look like oil-rubbed mahogany. We're not going to do that on Windows. Instead, you're going to see things that are rectangles. Rectangles without rounded corners. In the Apple world, we round corners. You are going to have square corners. Gradients. You're not going to do nearly as many gradients. It's solid colors, bold, solid colors. You're not going to try and model things from the real world. You're going to do an authentically digital experience. You're not going to see reflections or shadows as much either. All right, so that's one thing that's different. Let me point out another thing that's different. Oh. Microsoft has worked very hard to optimize the tablet experience. And honestly, most people, most of the time they're using a tablet, are consuming content, not producing it. So really, you want to create space for the user to see whatever it is. You want them to be able to read the book, or watch the movie, or browse the web page. You want them to use all the pixels for content, not for Chrome. And in a lot of iOS applications, we have a bar across the top or the bottom that gives the user the possibility of doing commands, going in and editing, and things like that. With Windows, there is a standard gesture for bringing up the app bar, which has the commands specific to that application. You just swipe from the top or the bottom. For things that are universal throughout the whole platform, you swipe in from the right, and you get the charms menu. Okay, I just think the word charms menu is really funny. It sounds like it was designed by a Japanese schoolgirl, right? The charms menu. But no offense to the Japanese schoolgirls in the audience. The other thing that you'll see is there's a lot more emphasis on type, actually having text describe things instead of icons. So coming from the Apple world, you have a lot of icons. The older window world had gazillions of icons. You guys had these toolbars across the top with 50 different icons, only like 7 of which ever made sense to me. They were all out of date, right? If it was saving, there was a big arrow going into a floppy disk. My children didn't even know what that was. It's so much easier now just to have a button that says save. Yes, you're going to have to localize it. You're going to have to look up the word for save in 50 different languages. But I think that instead of a user interface that no one understands, at least having one language worth of people understand it is a huge step forward. So type. You're going to see a lot more type. And instead of icons in general, you may see more photographs as well. Okay. So the design is a little bit different. Nothing too scary, but a little bit different. One of the things that really surprised me was that the gesture language was different as well. Because I kind of thought, well, everyone's just going to do what iOS and Android did. You poke at things, and everything is self-evident. But Microsoft decided that there would be certain things that they would do consistently, and all users would have to read the one-page pamphlet describing how it worked, and then they would know. But I didn't know, so why don't I point out some of the ones that surprised me, okay? Let's go back. So here's the first one. You can always go back to the previous application by swiping in from the left. And I was on the browser, so I'm just going to swipe in from the left, and there's the browser. It takes over the screen. Nice. If I swipe in from the top or bottom, I get the other controls. So I get the URL bar across the bottom. I get the different windows that are open, the ability to save them as bookmarks. This is all Chrome, and so most of the time, I don't need it at all. And so I just keep it out of the way so I can experience the web page, right? Sliding in from the right, we have the Charms menu. I'm not going to talk about that right now, but it's the universal capabilities that the user wants access to at all times. The ability to search, the ability to share, the ability to change their settings, and then there's the devices one, which enables you to send things to devices. I haven't actually used that one much, but it's universal. And look, the status bar, right? All this stuff would typically be at the status bar across the top of your iPhone or your iPad, taking up pixels all the time. Here, we can bring it up when we want to very easily, but it's not on screen all the time. Let me show you one other gesture that surprised me. So in iOS, often you'll have an edit button, and then things are selectable to be deleted or something like that. So you kind of change modes, which is actually something that most GUI interface people don't like, is the idea of going into a mode to do something specific. With Windows 8, they have the gesture of just pulling down a little bit on something to select it. So for example, I don't want my games and videos to be on this screen, so I will just drag down on each one, and they're selected. And when they're selected, the app bar pops up so that I can see the actions that I can perform on those selected items, and I can just unpin those from the screen so I don't have to see them anymore. All right? Okay. One other gesture that's interesting is the idea of semantic zoom. So Apple really developed that pinch gesture, and they showed us commercials over and over again until we all learned how to do pinching to zoom in and out. What Microsoft has done is that as you drill down, let's see, I'll go into my photo library, and I'm going to look at this. If I pinch now, I get a different view that has information that I can actually consume. So it doesn't just make things smaller, it gives you a meaningful look at it, and that often means reformatting it. So if you're in the People app and you have 7,000 people in there, when you pinch, you actually get a list of letters, and when you click on the letter, you see the people with that first name. So the idea is that when you zoom, you should be always seeing information that is usable to you. And it also cuts down a lot on this need to scroll so much to the left and the right, because you zoom out, you get to where you need to go, and you use it. Okay? So those are sort of the big gestures that surprised me. Oh, and that was my demo, Microsoft Design. The tools are all analogous. So there's an IDE that we use on iOS called Xcode, and then the tool that we use to lay out the interface is Interface Builder. On Windows, you have Visual Studio, which is your IDE, and you can actually do some layout of XAML inside Visual Studio, but if you really want to go crazy with designing everything, you can go into Blend and do that. It's a standalone tool that your designers are going to love. And it works with both the C# and C++ XAML and also the JavaScript. So let me do a quick demo of that, of these tools as well. This is going to be my longer demo. And let me point out that I have only been doing this for 3 months. So there, it may go off the rails at any moment. I'm doing this without a net. So you'll be patient with me. I'm just going to create a new project. I'm going to say it's a Windows Store app. I'll start with a blank app. I'm going to call it random. So when I wrote my first book, it was on desktop Cocoa applications, and the exercise was you brought up a button, and when you clicked the button, it generated a random number and displayed it to you. Because this is 2012, I'm going to go one step better. I'm going to generate two, count them, two random numbers and display those as well. So this is the blank project. And the interesting part to an iOS programmer is this mainpage.xaml. The mainpage.xaml describes one page of what the user will see. And so it's analogous to what we call a view controller. And so if you created a main page .zip file, you'd also typically have a main page .m and h, and they would both be subclasses of UI view controller, right? We have the same idea on Windows 8. They use the phrase the code behind. So you have the main page .xaml and the main page .xaml.cs, the C# that goes with it. Okay? So let's look at the XAML. mainpage.xaml. Here you can see mainpage.xaml.cs. If I double-click on main page, this is another big change. You have to double-click on stuff. All right? I started off, I would single-click stuff and just wait and wait. There's a GUI builder here, and you could drag things out onto it. I am, once again, doing this without a net, so I'm going to cheat and drag out these things from my toolkit that I have preloaded it with. Here in my demo, I have this XAML, and I'm going to just drag it out and drop it. And it's a stack panel, which arranges GUI items from top to bottom. I have a text block, which is going to be displaying question marks. And I have a button that has the text the content is random number, so that's what you'll see. And it's going to trigger the generate numbers method. I named the two text fields. So you see that? It says first field is the first one and second field is the second one. And this is actually a big change from iOS, because in iOS I would then have to go to the H file and declare these instance variables. In mainpage.xaml.cs, it declares it to be a partial class. So this is sort of like categories. It enables you to break a class up into several files. These variables are not declared in that file. They are declared in another file, which I'll show you in just a second. Okay? All right. So that'll get us the layout. You can even see it on the screen. It's not... I'll show it to you in a second. Let's go to the main page C#. You can see it's a lot like Java. Am I allowed to say that? It's a lot like Java. So I can drag out the C# code that generates two random numbers and sets the text property of the first field to be the first generated random number and the text property of the second field to be the second random number. All right? So this should feel familiar. It's very much like writing a view controller. You're wiring your button to your view controller and triggering methods in it. And then you're taking advantage of the pointers back to the text fields to update their values. Okay, so it's not that strange. All right, if we build it and run it, the text is going to be very small. I'm going to fix that in just a second. So I'm just going to run this here on the local machine. There is a simulator, and I'll talk about that in a second. Oh, random is a namespace used as type. Sorry, what? Right-click and resolve it. Should it say resolve? The other random. Namespace random. Random is a namespace, but use like a type. I swear this just worked. Do I need a using?
Yeah, you need a using, but if you do it through a tool, it doesn't automatically.
Show me. How? Oh, I called the app random.
Yes.
Ah. Boy, I really messed that up. What?
Try system.
System?
No,
sorry.
Were you declaring as random?
Yeah.
And
All right. Ah! Thank you so much. When I did the demo, I always named it like random 15 so that when I actually did the demonstration, it wouldn't say, you've already got one called that. So, note to self. Okay, so now we can build and run it. This is the splash screen that you get by default. You see the tiny little question marks? We'll fix that in just a second. But I do want to point out that it actually is a running application. It generates two random numbers and displays it. So getting started with this, it's not that tricky. It's very similar to what you've done before. I said that this is a partial class. So you can see it says sealed partial class. So where's the rest of the class? When it compiled, it created a main page.g.i.cs. This is the other part of that main page class. It's a partial class. And here, you can see that it has declared both first field and second field as instance variables of type text block. And then, here you can't see it all because it's too long, but where it says generated... It's loading the XAML file here, where it says load component. It's loading in the XAML file and bringing those objects to life. And then it's looking them up by name and setting your pointers to point to them. So the XAML file is not just about creating instances, right? The nib file just creates instances. The XAML file actually is augmenting your class to do the right thing. So it's a little different, but it's interesting. So it's always nifty moving from platform to platform and learning how they do the same thing that you've always done, just a little bit differently. So the tools. The tools are free. You can go and you can download them. And both the operating system and the tools will run just fine in Parallels or if you want to do boot camp. So you can run everything on your Mac laptop. You even get a 90-day free OS download. You can use that for 90 days and decide if you want to commit to it or not. If you commit to it, how much is Windows 8?
It depends on the SKU. You can get it for as little as
$39. As little as $39. And these tools are the same ones that you're going to use to develop Windows Phone apps as well. And Windows Phone 8 has APIs that are looking more and more like the Windows Store apps on Windows 8 as well. So more and more of your code is going to be reusable between the two platforms. So when you're counting up devices, include the fact that the you could be able to develop for the phone very easily as well. Okay, questions on any of that? All right. The next issue that you're going to face is that on iOS, you only have a couple of form factors, right? You got the Retina display, you got the 1024 by 768 iPad and iPad Mini, you got the iPhone, and then you can rotate it so you can support landscape and portrait if you want to, but you don't really have to. With Windows 8, you just have a lot more possible screen sizes. So you saw the big perception pixel thing that was at the keynote. A lot of pixels on down to really very small tablets. So first thing you're going to have to deal with is all the different size devices. But then it gets a little trickier than that even, in that you have to deal with snapped. So the user can divide up their screen into one quarter and three quarters and show two different apps at the same time. So you have to deal with the snapped and the filled, which is the three-quarters setting. And then you have to deal with both landscape and portrait on all these different devices, which is another reason why XAML looks a little more like cascading style sheets, because it makes it a little easier to deal with all the different form factors that you're going to have to use your application in. A good application should do the right thing, that is, when you go from being landscape to being snapped, you need to reorder the material so that it goes up the page, so it's usable as a tall, narrow application. And that's going to take some time. Controls. The Windows 8 stuff ships with sort of a standard set of controls that you would expect. There are a couple that are missing that you would expect if you're coming from iOS. For example, they don't have a date picker. There is a third-party library called Callisto, which includes a date picker and a ratings control. A lot of the standard stuff you expect to be there is there, so don't fret. But if there's something missing, you might go look at this Callisto library as well. It's free. One of the other things that's kind of nifty about the XAML is it gives you a little more control over how you can format your controls without writing any code, without any C# code, just editing the XAML file. So let me show you sort of the power of XAML in this area. In Visual Studio, I can go into, let's start with the text being so small. That's a little bit problematic. I'm going to go into the main page of XAML, and there is a set of common styles. And one of the ones that is there is the header text style. Am I right? Is that right? Let me drag it down, and I'll remember. So I can style the text by saying, go into the static resources and set the style to be the header text style. And that'll create something that's a more reasonable size. Similarly, you can do both of them. We'll just copy paste. All right. And if we just build and run that. Sorry. Build and run that. And now we get a reasonably sized numbers. This common styles is something I could edit. So I could change the foreground color, for example, to be yellow, and then all of the text boxes that were using that style would use yellow. Once again, this is a nice thing in an application where you're dealing with a lot of pages, each with a lot of controls. It's nice to be able to update them in one place and have them all get fixed. I think I just unplugged my screen. Is the video guy here? I'm going to let you take care of that. I'm going to keep talking. I think I touched the HDMI connector. All right, where was I? So that was type 5, the controls. Point 6 was, I just need those slides. There you go, okay. Go back to PowerPoint. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me continue my demo. So one of the things that's interesting about the way that they've set up their controls is that the controls... The controls can be broken down into parts, like what they look like and what they act like are actually two kind of separate things. And you can edit those inside the XAML file. So let's do that. Let's make an oval button. So I can go back to the common style sheet. So these are all this is the place where I've had the header style. And I can just drop a new style on there. So this is a style for a button base that is the oval button. And what it does is it replaces the template with an ellipse and then the text drawn over top of it. And by default, the color will be red, but I can actually override that, just like in cascading style sheets, when I use it. Okay? So now I can go back to my main page.xaml, and I can set the style on the button to be an oval button. And now when I run it, we see that now we've changed the look and feel, the look of the button without it writing any C# code, which is pretty nifty. And once again, it's a lot like It's a lot like Cascade style sheets in that inside this button, I can also set its background to be, we'll make it aquamarine, because that's conveniently located. And now when we run it, we are overriding that property that we set inside the common style sheet. So it's nice. We can set it in one place, but we can override it in places where we need to, which is something that you can't really do with nib files on iOS. So that's a nifty feature. Yep. All right, back to PowerPoint. In iOS programming, we talk a lot about Model View Controller. And when I came and started reading documentation that Microsoft gives you, I was very confused because they had the model and they had the view and they had this thing that to me was a controller, but they called it a view model, which makes for a ridiculous sounding thing, the model view model, but it sounds good to the ears of the people who came up with it. And it's honestly, it's exactly like Model View Controller, except they have to specify that the view model is bound to the user interface using bindings. So these controls all have bindings, and they go in and grub around inside the view model object and read its data and update its data. So it's so it relies on this idea of data bindings. If the bindings were not there, it would just be called Model View Controller. The idea of model view view model is popular and it's encouraged, but it's not like iOS. On iOS, if you don't do model view controller, you're in for a world of hurt. The system keeps wanting to push you in that direction, and whenever you fight it, it gives you misery. On Windows, you can do all sorts of stuff and never know that the data bindings are there, and everything will be just fine. So it's there, you can do it, it's encouraged, but it's not mandatory. Okay, so far? All right. One of the things that's different in terms of the user interface is this charms menu, which creates capabilities that are available throughout the whole operating system. So let me give you an example. If I go back to the start menu, and I can just start typing, right? I can say, I'm going to, somebody just called me, they want me to come to Moscow, I can type Moscow. Right now I have the apps selected, there are no apps called Moscow, but maybe I want to see Moscow on a map, so the map will go and show me Moscow. If I want to know the weather in Moscow, I can go there. No results match your search. All right. Oh, you're not connected to the internet. That's interesting. Here's one. Cocktail flow. There's actually a Moscow Mule. It's a drink. Let's learn more about that. I'll tap on it. It shows me the ingredients. And actually, this was the... it's not from Moscow at all. There was a spirits distributor who wanted to convince people to drink vodka. And he had a friend who had a ginger beer factory. And so they came up with this drink in 1941 and convinced everyone that this is what all the cool people in Moscow were drinking. And that's what brought vodka to the United States. Moscow Mule. So the search is available inside all these different applications. And as a result, this is an easy way for you to make users aware of your application every single day, because they're going to do a search. And if your cocktail flow application keeps showing up in there, they're going to go, oh, yeah, I haven't used that Cocktail Flow app in a while, and it will bring them back. It's cheap marketing. It's not that hard to implement the search contracts. This is one of the contracts. And one of the other ones is sharing. So let's say I was in my photos. Let's do photos. It's sort of a standard sharing opportunity. And I have this picture of my feet because every time you get a new camera, you got to take a picture of your feet, right? And then if I bring in the charms, menu, one of the things is search. And all the applications that have advertised themselves as willing to share pictures for you appear here. So I could tweet it through Tweetro, I could put it on Facebook with FlipToast, I could email it to my friends, I could put it on my SkyDrive. Once again, these applications are just advertising the ability to share photos for you. And this is another nice way to bring your application up. It's also nice because as someone who is writing an application, you don't have to look up every single possible way that someone could share their photos. You don't want to look for every single social networking site in the world. But if the person has an app that will talk to it, that app will take care of it for you. So you ship your app willing to share images, and as more and more social media apps appear, the person will get more and more capabilities added to your application for free, which is pretty cool. Because, you know, it's kind of a nightmare trying to keep up with what are all the cool kids sharing with today. So the share contract is also very nifty. You should definitely implement it in your app if it's appropriate. That's the contracts demo. Microsoft has generously invited me to come and speak to you, which is a huge honor. And one of the things they really want to do for you and for them is to make sure that you are successful on the platform. And so they asked me to slip in some hints about how you can actually make some money on this. The first one is get your app out there. You need it to be on the store. No one can buy it until it's on the store. There's a time period you can set for your free trial where the person can download it and work with it for 3 days or 9 days. And you should definitely give people the opportunity to try out your application. When everybody else lets people try out their apps and you don't, you look sketchy. So make sure you let people try out the applications. Microsoft will do in-app purchase for you. It's the same deal. You get 70% up to $25,000, and then it's 80%. But for a company like Amazon, like the Amazon Kindle application on iOS, doesn't allow you to buy apps. It doesn't allow you to buy books inside the app, because Apple was making them go through the Apple in-app purchase. Apple was going to take 30%. Amazon wanted just to take your credit card number and give you a book. So Microsoft lets you do this. It lets you do third-party commerce. They don't take a cut at all. You handle the credit card processing. It's all your problem. So this is another great opportunity on the platform to cut them out of their cut. Microsoft has an ads service. They were here in this room talking about it earlier. So you can set aside a tile inside your application, and they will rent that tile out to people. You give them keywords and describe what you want. There's also subscriptions. It was a long time before Apple made subscriptions available on their store, but Microsoft is doing it right out of the gate. So you should definitely take advantage of these features of the store so that you can monetize your app. Okay? Questions on that? All right. Live Tiles. Live Tiles is another great way to advertise your application. So on iOS, right, you just have an icon. And if you have push notifications, you can also do badging on it, so a number. There are wonderful things you can do with these tiles. So if you just look at it, first of all, the start screen has really interesting information. It tells you how many email messages you have not read. It tells you what the stock market is doing. It's kind of like a little newspaper, and you can pick information and look at it. One of the other things that's kind of nifty with the tiles is that these tiles are all for applications, but you can actually pin things inside applications. For example, let's go into the People app. And this is my friend Jen. Jen always has something interesting on her Facebook. And so maybe I just want to have her feed available to me all the time. I can just bring it up, and I can pin this to the start. And now she gets her own tile. So when I go back, now I have a tile. It's not for an application. It's a pin within an application, and it enables me to easily drill down into that application. And this is a nice thing for you to do in your applications. If you have a lot of pieces of data, different pages that the user can go to, make it possible for them to pin it to the top page. The tiles can come in a lot of different forms. So I got Wikipedia here. It's too wide, but it's not even live right now, so I probably don't want that. I'm just going to select it. I'm going to select it with my finger. There we go. And now I can make it smaller. So just shrink it down into one square. So if you don't have anything interesting on your live tile, it shouldn't by default be wide. If you're going to do something cool, I think it's completely fine to claim that much real estate. But the user has the ability to shrink and raise the tiles. You can have pictures. You can have periodic updates. You can have text. You can have icons. There are a certain set of templates, but it actually gives you enough flexibility that you can do pretty nifty stuff inside the live tiles. Let's add a live tile to our random application, which will just show the last random number that we generated. Okay, just to show you how easy it is. I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. I'm going to pull up the main page C#. I'm going back to my class. And here, after I generate the random number, I'm just going to create a tile updater, update manager. I'm going to drill down into the text. I'm going to get the numbers text, put it in there, and then I'm going to create a notification that will push that out to the tile. So if we run this now, what have I done? Oh, I got it using. Sorry. So to get the notifications, I've got to include. We call it including in the Mac world. You guys in the Windows world call it using. Windows.ui.notifications. Did that do it? Yes. I'm getting good at this. All right, so if I generate a few random numbers, and then 59 I'm expecting to appear on the tile, I go back. It sometimes takes a couple seconds, but I can update the tile as well. So it's really not that tricky to do something on the live tile. Images would work the same way. All right, back to the slides. So take some time to design a good live tile that's going to be interesting and useful to the user, and also make it possible to pin things from inside your application. Notifications. On iOS, the push notifications come from a server, and that's where you get the badges up. It's always, you got to be online to get the notifications and update the badges. On Windows 8, it can all be local, so you can actually be updating from within inside the application and get those live tiles to happen. So, once again, this is essentially 2009 for the Windows Store. It's a great opportunity to get in and claim some territory, be the next Angry Birds. And so you should definitely start now. A lot of our enterprise customers are coming to us and asking us for advice. I think this is going to be a huge opportunity for the mobile workforce to get enterprise-grade applications from a company that they are familiar with. So it's time. And Microsoft is doing what they can to help you. In particular, they have hired us to come and do a day and a half seminar in Mountain View, California. It is totally free. It's only room for about 200 people, so you want to sign up as soon as you can. If you don't get in, do not worry, because we are going to be make it available on Channel 9. It will be streamed live, and it will be made available. Here is the URL. AKA MS iOS to Windows Camp, and we are just honored to be part of this. So please come and do that. We will also be developing a 5-day class on Windows 8 development. I'm going to put a plug in there. And that brings me to the end. Once again, my company is Big Nerd Ranch. We do training and consulting on mobile platforms. We also do cloud services using Ruby on Rails. We are at your service. Can I answer any questions? There's a microphone here.
That library, that Google Shim thing I talked about is called Angle Project.
Okay.
It converts, you know, OpenGL to DirectX, so you can just write OpenGL and don't have to learn DirectX.
Neat.
What was the name of that company you said made the control library that had the date picker in it? The
Callisto.
Mm-hmm. So it's just controls that we couldn't get in, and we know you need, so we put them out there. They're free. They're open source. You download mm-hmm. open source. This is a common pattern that we use in the Microsoft world.
Okay.
So it's open source. There's not a company behind it. But we have a lot of Microsoft controls.
Thanks. Okay. Other questions? Go ahead.
How do you get your tile to show for your app? You had the tile already on screen in front, then you updated it later, but how do you actually get your tile to show up, the random app tile?
It actually happens automatically, just as soon as you start your application.
Does it always add a tile?
Every app has a tile,
yes. And when you install it, it puts it in place.
Okay.
So you download it from the store. Part of the process is that it puts the tile in place. Other questions? It has been a great honor. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.